It's been said that living well is the best revenge. But when we're lying awake at night replaying every cruel word, every injustice, every betrayal, that saying sounds more like a cop-out than courage. When we're betrayed, our mind kicks into gear, devising vengeance that will settle the score. Hi, I'm Clayton Bjellin, and today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll cites a biblical hero that held a sword in his hand, ready to avenge his enemy. Yet David chose mercy over justice. So how do we surrender battles? Chuck titled today's message, Doing Right When You've Been Done Wrong.
Fast forward to the 21st century as you turn to Romans chapter 12 and get your pen handy, because I am going to give you principles you will need and you will claim in the days ahead. Our focus now falls on the verses in Romans 12, but a warning is in order. I need to warn you of something. Not only does the enemy hear everything I'm going to be saying, you're going to be tempted to erase it from your mind because you're going to justify your situation thinking it's unique. You're going to want to push the delete button about the time you put your key in your car. You're going to say, if Chuck only knew what I'm going through, he would have said, except for you. There is no exception. I am talking to you. Don't tell me the excuse. I am talking to you. More importantly, God is speaking to you today. And I am going to urge you for a few moments to think supernaturally rather than naturally. Verse 14. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Principle number one, write it down. Deliberately resist your natural instinct. Deliberately resist your natural instinct. That's verse 14. All of us have built-in instincts. When something comes too close to our face, we blink and we turn away. When we're about to fall, we throw our hands out. That's a natural instinct. When someone does wrong, the natural instinct is get even. Get back. Hopefully worse than he got to you. But this says, bless those. Bless and do not curse. You know what the word bless means? It's worth looking at. It's a Greek term that means to speak well of. It's from which we get our word eulogy. Isn't that interesting? What we say at a casket to a corpse, we say nice things. We don't curse at a funeral. We bless. He's saying, don't wait till the funeral. Say the right things now. Give praise even. You see, the human nature when anger comes is to handle things in a natural way. God says, before you get angry, bless. You say, come on, wait, you're already turning defensive on me. I did not write this. I'm simply a messenger. That's why I use the word deliberately. Because if you wait for it to come naturally, you'll do what you're taught to do. And that's fight back. I was pulling my pickup out from a corner. I had paused at a light, and then I turned right. And I figured a little closely because a guy in a great big pickup with tires about as big as this room was coming bearing down on me. And he saw that I'd pulled out in front. He thought I was kind of a smart guy trying to push him out of traffic. And he decided that he was going to make my life a little different than it had been up to that moment. And he roared around me and then squealed around and turned right in front of me and stopped and stared at me. I go, hi. Why'd he do that? Hey. I'm trying to get on the same road he's on. And he's taking his half out of the middle. And what right do I have to? He's going to set things straight. You know why? That's what you do. I don't mean this to be pious, but that's what you do when you don't have the Lord. Honestly, I didn't just wave and say hi. I tell you, I was scared spitless. I just kind of backed up. I felt like my pickup was about this big, and You're not going to win if you decide to solve it by cursing. You will lose. You will lose. You will lose. So start by deliberately resisting your natural instinct. Write in the margin of your notes, Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath. A gentle answer turns away wrath. But a harsh word stirs up anger. Verse 17, verse 18, principle number 2. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. Here's the principle. Consciously fight every temptation to get even. Consciously fight every temptation to get even. The opening part of verse 17 in the Greek sentence is to no one. It's out of place for emphasis purpose. To no one pay back evil for evil. Getting even by reacting as the person first treated you couldn't be more wrong. David and Saul, the most natural tendency for that young, well-built, outdoor celebrity warrior is to put Saul out of his misery. He's insane anyway. That's not his to do. That normal reaction would be wrong. When you do what is wrong, an offense is intensified. When wounded and mistreated and humiliated, the person wrongs in return, and the fight is on. And the Hatfields and the McCoys relive their lives, except without guns, hopefully. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Well, then what's the alternative? To respect what is right. It means to foresee, to take thought of, to have regard for. That would include talking it out, doing that sooner rather than later, searching for ways that will communicate respect and regard. Now, I'm a realist. Let me just have you relax. I know that some enemies don't want there to be reconciliation. I know that. I understand that. Some folks want to fight the rest of their lives, but you don't. You won't. So the Lord gives us some breathing room in verse 18, if possible. Don't you like that? If possible. As so far as it depends on you. See, it's your barn. And you're not trying to clean his barn out. You're trying to keep yours clean. So far as it depends on you, you be at peace with all. Well, let me get to the third principle, then I'll apply that in a moment. Here's the third principle. This is in the next two verses. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. Principle number 3, get every word. Quietly trust God to handle all revenge. Quietly trust God to handle all revenge. Never take your own revenge, beloved. Leave room for the wrath of God. God is well able. You step back and say, Lord, this is, if I get involved in this, I'm going to make a mess of it. You know how I am when I get my own way. Lord, this is your move. Take over. Take charge. And so you back off deliberately and you wait. You wait for God to bring the vengeance, which he will do in his own time, never fast enough for you. But he'll do it. He'll do it. In fact, it says, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Let me make something clear, lest you're given to pacifism. That's not a national defense verse. Okay, this is a personal relationship, one with one. This is not if the enemy is invading your shores. You stand back and go, well, whatever, can I get you a drink? You're not going to do that. If a guy tries to break into your house, you don't say, hey, well, I got a lot in the kitchen. You might enjoy yourself. You shoot him. Okay? So, no, really, I knew that would get. Some of you have been Some of you have been waiting for something to applaud, and you got finally you're on my level, Chuck. I got it now. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about self-defense. We're talking about disagreements, arguments, those things that lead to lawsuits, fights, neighbor problems, on and on and on and on. We're talking about the stuff of life. And here it says, quietly trust God, back off, wait, trust him. And here he quotes from Deuteronomy 32, 35, and 36, where Moses sets the stage and Paul picks it up. As we back away and focus on doing what is right, our good disarms our enemy. Trust God. Don't trust me, trust God. When we back off and refuse to do what he or she expects, they're disarmed. And as in the case of Saul, who says, you are more righteous than I, to you the kingdom should go. Why? Because the shame of his conscience forced him to be disarmed. I'm interested in the little phrase, you will heap burning coals on his head. It's a word for doing what is right, which results in shame, doing a powerful work in another person's life, where they can hardly stand it till they back away. Roy Lauren, in his old commentary on Romans, says, a missionary to a group of Native Americans worked hard to communicate the importance of not retaliating. He urged them to do what is right, and doing so will heap coals of fire on the enemy's head. He explained it carefully. Later, one of the tribesmen carried it out. Missionary later asked him about it, hoping to hear that it was his love that prompted him to do it. The tribesman said, no, I just like to see his head smoke. When you do it God's way, the head will smoke, but you will not have lit the fire. His conscience will light it. That area you can't reach, no matter how many swords you throw or spears you throw, no matter how many curses you level, you will not bring about repentance. God does that. Saul's head smoked, if you will, when he looked up and there was David with a piece of his robe in his hand, and he realized he was close enough for me to feel his breath on the back of my neck, and he never touched me. What kind of man is that? That's God's kind of king. Deliberately resist your natural instinct. Consciously fight every temptation to get even. Quietly trust God to handle all revenge. You know what that requires? Listen to me. I know what I'm talking about, especially today. It requires you letting it go. Letting it go. Recently, I have gone through a terrible time. Only Cynthia knows how terrible. And I was on the verge of going too far, saying too much. And she heard me on the phone virtually screaming to a close friend. And she was dressing in the bathroom and walked out and came down to the bottom of the stairs, quickly dressing. And then she said to me, can I say something to you? And I got up from my desk and I walked over and sat down on the top stair. And I said, yeah. Let it go, she said. One of those verbal spears of wisdom. I mean, the point is like, can you see it? It's about 3 inches out of my back there. And she said, I heard your voice. I heard your tone. I heard your volume way over there in the bathroom downstairs. Come on, honey. Let it go. I did. Can you imagine my trying to preach this if I hadn't? Imagine what kind of hypocrite I'd have to be to tell you what to do and I'm not doing it. By the way, you notice the word I have not used since we started? Easy. The alternative is instead of being overcome by evil, you overcome evil. You know what happens when you're overcome by evil? Listen to me, you're obsessed. You're obsessed by wrong thoughts. If you will, you are possessed with plans for revenge. It occupies your waking moments and even accompanies your dreams. You are overcome by evil, and you become a victim. You're victimized by the very thing you're trying to get rid of. And some of you are living like that right now, right this hot little moment. Booker T. Washington once said, "I will not allow any man to make me lower myself by hating him." In the midst of all of this, my dear daughter, Colleen, made me aware of a book I have never read before. I've now read it 3 times. It's A Tale of Three Kings by Jean Edwards. Listen to some excerpts and you'll know why I've not been able to put the book down. God has a university. It is a small school. Few enroll, even fewer graduate. Very few indeed. God has this school because he does not have broken men. Instead, he has several other types of men. He has men who claim to be God's authority and aren't. Men who claim to be broken and aren't. And men who are God's authority, but who are mad and unbroken. And he has, regretfully, a mixture of everything in between. All of these he has in abundance, but broken men, hardly at all. In God's sacred school of submission and brokenness, why are there so few students? Because all who are in this school must suffer much pain. And as you might guess, it is often the unbroken ruler whom God sovereignly picks who metes out the pain. David was once a student in this school, and Saul was God's chosen way to crush David. As the king grew in madness, David grew in fear. But David had a question. What do you do when someone throws a spear at you? Does it not seem odd to you that David did not know the answer to this question? After all, everyone else in the world knows what to do when a spear is thrown at them. Why, you pick up the spear and you throw it right back. When someone throws a spear at you, David just wrench it out of the wall and throw it back. Absolutely everyone else does, and you can be sure of that. And in doing this small feat of returning thrown spears, you will prove many things. You are courageous. You stand for the right. You boldly stand against the wrong. You are tough. You can't be pushed around. You will not stand for injustice or unfair treatment. You are the defender of the faith, keeper of the flame, detector of all heresy. You will not be wronged. All of those attributes then combine to prove that you are also obviously a candidate for kingship. Yes, perhaps you are the Lord's anointed after the order of King Saul. There's also a possibility that some 20 years after your coronation, you will be the most incredibly skilled spear thrower in all the realm, and most assuredly, by then, quite mad. You can easily tell when someone has been hit by a spear, he turns a deep shade of bitter. David never got hit. Gradually, he learned a very well-kept secret. He discovered 3 things that prevented him from ever being hit. 1, never learn anything about the fashionable, easily mastered art of spear throwing. 2, stay out of the company of all spear throwers. 3, keep your mouth tightly closed. In this way, spears will never touch you, even when they pierce your heart. Saul is in your bloodstream, in the marrow of your bones. He makes up the very flesh and muscle of your heart. He is mixed into your soul. He inhabits the nuclei of your atoms. We would say he's in your DNA. King Saul is one with you. David the sheepherder would have grown up to become King Saul II. except that God cut away the Saul inside David's heart. The operation, by the way, took years and was a brutalizing experience that almost killed the patient. And what were the scalpel and tongs God used to remove this inner Saul? God used the outer Saul. King Saul sought to destroy David, but his only success was that he became the handmaiden of God to put to death the Saul who roamed about in the caverns of David's own soul. Yes, it is true that David was virtually destroyed in the process, but this had to be. Otherwise, the Saul in him would have survived. David accepted this fate. He embraced the cruel circumstances. He lifted no hand, offered no resistance, nor did he grandstand his piety. Silently, privately, he bore the crucible. Because of this, he was deeply wounded. His whole inner being was mutilated. His personality was altered. When the gore was over, David was barely recognizable. When God wants to do an impossible task, he takes an impossible person and crushes him. And that may very well be you right now. This is your moment to do it God's way. I plead with you, let it go. Will you bow with me, please? I'd like our heads to be bowed and our eyes closed. I'm going to ask something unusual of you. I'm going to ask that you not share this with other people, not for a while. I'm going to ask you to be quiet about it. Let it sink in. We get gabby and chatty, and before we know it, we're busy about trying to sound eloquent rather than being people of brokenness. If God's breaking you, we don't need any announcement. Let it be. Let it go. May I urge you to guard against putting your finger on that delete button? Don't let this message go. Get this CD. Just for yourself. Play it over and over and over and over again. Play it next year. Play it the year after. Until you finally begun to model the truth. If there's never been a time in your life when you have come to the cross and submitted yourself to the claims of Christ, then that's job one. That's the place to start. Come there first and go to your knees. Say to the Lord, I am a candidate for crushing. Start here. Start now. Hear our prayer, O Lord. Hear our prayer, O Lord. Incline thine ear to us and grant us thy peace. Dismiss us, our Father, with this sober message ringing in our ears. May we see that it's a message not for any other person except ourselves.
When wronged, we are invited to resist natural instincts to retaliate. Instead, the Apostle Paul instructs us to bless those who persecute, trust God to handle justice, and let go of bitterness. This supernatural response requires brokenness, but it does lead to freedom. You're listening to Insight for Living. Chuck Swindoll titled today's study, Doing Right When You've Been Done Wrong. And right now, we're pleased to offer a brand new hardbound 25-day Advent devotional. When you request it today, it will arrive in time for the start of Advent. And this new book is called Everlasting Light, A Journey from Promise to Presence. Again, the Advent devotional is called Everlasting Light, and you can request it online at ifl.org.au. That's ifl.org.au. When should Christians push back against government? I'm Clayton Bjellin, urging you to hear Chuck Swindoll's biblical answer Thursday on Insight for Living.